Blog Talk Radio.
People of Earth, attention. This is a voice speaking to you from thousands of miles beyond your planet.
Gotta make a version with the squeak in it. Good evening. Welcome to Eerie House, Oldie Timey Radio. And I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show, accompanied by
Dave Binkley from Weird This Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One. And we're also here with the one and only.
It is I, Garth the Ghoul, blah, blah, to you all.
We got radio. We're coming in from outer space. Its visitors are welcome from all planets tonight.
That's right.
Except the seventh planet. Those people stink. Yes.
Yeah.
Do the math.
Be careful.
Do the math.
People from Uranus. Yes. Yes.
Yeah, all right.
Yes.
I'm coming in a little distorted.
I think
you're coming in.
I think you're a little stronger. You're a little stronger, Gar.
Yeah.
Yep. A little stronger.
What?
Back off from the microphone. Oh. You're a little strong, sir.
Okay. I'm back in the game.
A little farther. Now go by the window.
Okay. Is it better now? Is it okay now?
Closer to the window.
Okay.
Is
it okay? Oh, my.
A little closer to the window. Oh, well. Maybe CW will call in.
Gar, oh, my.
Come back.
He's not.
Uh-oh, he's coming to us from beyond.
Hello?
Hi, come on in. Free coffee.
All right. Yeah.
Oh, no, not free coffee.
Coffee. Oh, I don't have any coffee. I need to go into the kitchen. Coffee time.
And he will be in outer space for sure. But no, we got three great radio programs about visitors.
Visitors from visit. Yep.
Have we had family theater here before?
I don't believe we have had family theater.
I'll
throw it in there, but I don't remember going over family theater before.
First
family
time on the program.
Raised my eyebrows. Huh?
Yeah, it is more of a family, although not completely religious, but you know, good for all members of the family to listen to. They were pretty good at bringing in guests as well, so be interesting to hear one of their programs along our topic tonight. Visitors from space.
Yep, and we got a Hall of Fantasy and a CBS radio workshop tonight.
Yeah, we have a lot of radio workshops lately.
Yeah.
If you listen very closely to the family. Now I forgot what it was called. Family Playhouse? Family Workshop?
Family
Theater.
Theater. Okay, there we go. One of those. If you listen very closely, they take their tagline, and they modify it, and they print it on T-shirts in the 1970s. You'll have to figure that out.
All right. We'll figure that out. We might as well start with Family Theater.
Yes.
Sure, why not?
Because now you got my curiosity burning.
Uh-huh.
See if I can catch the catchphrase.
Uh-huh, you will. Okay, yeah. It's very blatant. Okay. And my coffee's still in the microwave, so, yeah, it's just...
Is it as blatant as this?
Make me a size of jackfruit!
Because that would be...
It's about that blatant, yeah. When you hear it, you'll go, oh. I see what you did there.
And I bet you, and hey, I bet you, Family Theater never got a nickel from it. I bet you.
Oh no, Family Theater would have sued the whatever off of somebody if they would have seen it. What it got changed into?
Yeah.
Well, very counterculture to what they were.
Yeah,
they
have tough lawyers, but.
And not tough love, yeah. You know, yeah.
No. But they got an interesting story for us tonight called The Visitor.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got James. We got James Whitmore in there, and I forget who the second one that was I mentioned on there, but it'll come to you in the program. No.
No, you sure?
James Whitmore is in there, and he did certainly a lot of television and a lot of theater, Broadway, and I didn't hear this. I did not know he did much, if any, radio, and so this was fun for me to hear him in this.
That's right. And do we
have
our
good brother Ernest?
Go ahead.
Yeah, I think our good brother Ernest was the light guy on this. He was running the lights.
Oh, maybe,
you know. And,
maybe so.
Yeah.
Maybe so. Because you need all the lights you can have on radio.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That keeps somebody busy anyway. All right. This one's called The Visitor. Do we have an original broadcast date?
We do. Wednesday, April 30th, 1952, according to seven sources.
Family Theater presents Jane Wyatt, Ward Bond, and James Whitmore. From Hollywood, the Mutual Network, in cooperation with Family Theater, presents James Whitmore and Ward Bond in The Visitor. To introduce the drama, here is your hostess, Jane Wyatt.
Thank you, Tony Lafrano. Family Theater's only purpose is to bring to everyone's attention a practice that must become an important part of our lives if we are to win peace for ourselves, peace for our families, and peace for the world. Family Theater urges you to pray. Pray together as a family. And now to our drama, The Visitor, starring James Whitmore as Lou Anders and Ward Bond as the Major.
Time, Major. Are you going to let me off this field?
For the last time, no. And you know why, Mr. Anders.
And you won't let me file my story from here?
No.
You say I know why. Well, I don't know why. And frankly, I think you're a little bit of a fool for this attitude. For the first time in the history of the world, we are visited by someone from another planet. For the first time in the history of the world, we're given a solution for all the troubles this Earth is heir to. By someone who might know, and you want to play dictator and withhold
us. That's enough, Mr.
It's Ernest. Not enough, Major. This isn't a military installation. It's a private airfield. And this isn't a military matter. It concerns everybody. And get this, Major Winters. I'm going to print this story while it'll still do some good, with your help or without it. And if your guest from outer space dies before I can print it, you can bet your life you'll never be a colonel.
Get out of here, Anders.
Don't order me around, Junior. I'm not under martial law. I'll be over at the cafe eating if you decide to change your mind. If you've got a mind.
Wow. If it isn't the poor man's William Shakespeare.
Hello, Millie.
Well, you have.
Well, I'll tell you what. Give me a cup of hot water with a squirt of chocolate syrup in it and a gob of whipped vegetable oil on top, huh?
You making remarks about our hot chocolate with whipped cream again?
Alleged hot chocolate and reportedly whipped cream, Millie. Never button yourself down with an exact statement. There's too much risk.
You've been drinking?
And fighting.
Oh. Major still won't let you tell the world, huh?
That's right.
Well, he's only doing his job. But you know what doesn't seem right?
No, no, what doesn't seem right?
With that funny little guy so sick, why don't they take him to a hospital?
He shouldn't be moved, Millie. They're treating him all right here. They brought almost a whole hospital here to keep him alive.
I wonder what he's got.
Who knows? He's so fragile, it could be anything from hangnail on up. I can see it now. Martian visitor dies of hangnail.
Hey, do you suppose the little guy could be part of a plan?
Plan?
Yeah. He comes here real sick, hmm? Okay, so maybe everybody else catches what he's got. You see?
Yeah.
And everybody dies. And then they invade.
Invade?
Yeah, you know. What do you call it, warfare? Bio something.
Biologic.
Yeah.
Well, you got a point, Millie. But it's not too probable.
Not too probable? So a six-story bowling ball with a little man inside makes a perfect landing in the middle of runway 21. That's probable? Before he even gets out of the thing, he turns green with what the doc says looks like a cross between diphtheria and typhoid fever. Is that probable?
No, but, Millie, if you talk to this guy...
Talk to him? I don't want to get near him. Here's your chocolate. Oh, pardon me. I mean, here is what usually reliable sources tell me is hot chocolate.
Thanks, Millie.
Don't thank me. You're paying for it.
Stranders?
Yes?
Major Winters would like to see you, sir, in his office.
Hey, maybe he's changed his mind.
Oh, no, Millie, me love. With my luck, he's probably going to tell me I've been drafted. Major, you want to see me?
Oh, yes. Come in, Mr. Anders. Sit down. You can write your story now if you'd like.
I can't.
The visitor's dead.
Dead?
He's been dead for almost an hour.
Then you knew it the last time I was in here.
I've been waiting for an autopsy report. You'll see when you read it why I was obliged to keep a news blackout about this whole affair.
May I see it?
I just got my information by telephone. I'll see that you get the coroner's written report within the next few minutes.
I see.
In the meantime, you're free to use my telephone to file your story. I'll see that you're not disturbed.
All right.
The man on the switchboard will place your call for you. And, Anders, if I were you, I'd wait for the coroner's report before writing me up as the villain.
Major, you don't mind if I write the truth?
No, Mr. Anders, but write all the truth, eh?
I will. Hello. Please, get me Rhinelander, 75111. What city? Los Angeles. Thank you. Oh, hello, Judy. Yeah, this is Lou Anders. Give me the city room, will you, and tie me in with Rewrite. Thanks. Hello, Willard. Lou, I got something for you. Now, get this, Will. It'll sound like science fiction, but it's not, and I don't want it rewritten. Just copy it and print it. You ready? All right, here she comes. Dateline, Delano Airport, 3 miles west of Delano, California, Wednesday, April 21st, 1952. A little more than 4 hours ago, a spaceship landed at this field. It came from the planet Mars and was flown here by a living Martian. You heard me. A human being of flesh and blood, with the same kind of thoughts, the same kind of emotions, even the same feelings as you and I. I have spoken with this man from Mars, and so have ranking officials of this government. The following is a factual account of the events concerning this strange occurrence. Am I going too fast for you? All right. On April 21st, this reporter, while en route to Delano, California, was stopped at a military roadblock. Off on highway... No, 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 no. I am not going to turn around and go back. I am working for the Los Angeles Daily Post-Dispatch. I am on my way to see a man in Delano regarding a story.
What kind of a story?
That is none of your business, Junior, and I'm not in the Army. So now you might as well save my time, your time, and the Army's time by taking me to your commanding officer. Now, should we go in your Jeep or in my car?
Okay, Max. Follow me. But remember, it was your idea.
I'll keep it in mind.
Just what did you hope to gain, Mr. Anders?
Access to the city of Delano.
Why?
For my paper. I'm going to see a man who lives there and confirm a story.
Would you mind telling me what kind of a story?
No. No, a farmer called the paper and said a strange kind of aircraft had been hovering over his south pasture all morning.
Strange kind of aircraft?
That's right. Hmm. A big silver ball. He said it was about twice as big as his barn. He didn't say what size barn.
Did he say anything else about it?
Yes, he did. He said it glowed, for one thing. And that he'd been taking pictures of it with his Kodak all morning. He called us. Think he could get a pretty good price for his pictures. And he said that he thought somebody ought to know about it.
Do you think he called any other newspapers?
I don't think so. Sounded pretty good, so we asked him not to.
And you wanted an exclusive, huh?
Yes.
Good. What was this farmer's name?
I'm not at liberty to say, Major.
You know, Mr. Anders, these rumors about flying discs from other worlds can be very dangerous as well as ridiculous.
Yes, I thought so. But now I'm not so sure. You closed one of California's arterial highways, Major. Made a restricted area out of a pretty good-sized swatch of farmland. You must have a reason. I'll give you 8-1 it isn't war games.
I will drive over to the field and I'll show you why if you want. But you can't write about it, at least not for a while.
Uh-huh.
And I'll have to ask you not to leave the area of this occurrence till you have my permission. This is a pretty big thing, Anders.
It's beginning to look that way. Oh, about those conditions, Major. Have any other papers been admitted?
No, and I assure you that none will be.
And let's go.
Is that what your farmer told you about?
Holy cow.
Now, would you believe me and go back home if I told you that this was one of our super secret weapons?
No.
I didn't think so. And you want to take a look?
Let's go.
And it's been right there in the middle of the runway for the last 3 hours.
It's not on the ground.
No. It's hovering about 3 feet off the ground. Doesn't seem to be equipped with any landing gear at all.
Well, Major, I don't want to seem stupid, but what is the thing?
Well, this fellow coming toward us should be able to tell us. He's Arnold Griffith of Mount Palomar. Dr. Griffith?
Mr. Winters?
Dr. Griffith, this is Lou Anders of the Post Dispatch.
How do you do?
How do you do, Doctor?
Anything happened?
Not so far. We've found that the glow it gives off is not from heat, and it's not radioactive. We don't know what kind of machinery makes the sound. But from sonar soundings, we've found that the object seems to be hollow, or very nearly so.
Well, that's a relief.
Relief? Why?
Well, there was some conjecture, Mr. Anders, that it might be a guided missile of another power containing explosives. I mean the missile, not the power.
Of course. Wait a minute, though. If it isn't that, then it must be from outer space.
That is not necessarily the case, Anders.
Major, Dr. Griffith, come quick. We've discovered something.
Well, come on.
Hit it again, Wooly.
Well, what's so unusual about this?
There's somebody in there.
There sure is.
I don't like it, Major. I don't like it at all.
Lieutenant Wooly, I want cover here. Have all available weapons aimed and ready.
Yes, sir. Right away, Major.
Wait a minute, Major. Suppose whoever's in there is friendly.
Well, whoever he, she, or it is, they're not going to surprise us.
I wouldn't make book on it, Major.
Hey, what the... It's coming down.
Gentlemen, let's leave.
Best idea I've heard lately, Professor.
It was a strange sensation watching the landing. I was conscious, and I think the others were. That a big decision had been made by whoever or whatever was at the controls of that strange, sphere-shaped machine. The action of landing crushed the base of it like an eggshell. Major, you've got to get that man out of there.
We don't know that there is a man in it, Anders. We don't know.
It could be a big mistake.
Mistake? There's a man in there. You heard him.
How do you know? You call that tapping evidence?
It could be like opening Pandora's box.
What are you, Griffith, a witch doctor?
Listen, you... That could still be a guided missile, and it could be that it is from outer space. It could have almost everything.
New diseases, almost anything. Still, in the name of science...
Name of science. In the name of God, you better do what's right about this. That thing is an aircraft, and it was apparently crash-landed by a human being. Now, you'd better try to get him out, or you'll see what public sentiment can do. And believe me, I'm just the guy that can stir it up.
Anders,
we're
you...
already, Major.
All right, cut it open. If there's anyone inside, get him out.
Yes, sir.
Human, come with me. On the double.
I'm going over there.
Wait a minute, Doctor. Anders, you've had a lot to say since you've arrived here. Well, I've got something to say to you. Don't you ever threaten me with public sentiment or anything else again. With God as my judge, I'm going to try to do my duty as I see it. And, Mr. Anders, I don't need any pencil-pushing newsboy to point it out for me. Lieutenant Woolley.
Yes, sir?
Take Mr. Anders over to the airport cafe and see that he stays there till I tell you otherwise.
Yes, sir. Am I under arrest?
You can call it that, yes. Come on, Doctor.
Where are you going?
I'll ask your advice just once for the record. If that thing out there that my men are working on with the acetylene torches is a bomb, where do you think I ought to be?
Ooh, what is it? What could it be?
Well, it's not the man from GLAAD.
It's a boom boom over there.
It could be a boom boom over there.
Cool it with the boom booms.
I forgot I was on mute. It's a chicken and an egg. It's a chicken.
Or
which came first?
Or
it's a goat from outer space.
Space goat.
Space goat, coast to coast, yeah.
Hey.
Yeah.
Space goat,
coast to coast.
I think we just hit
the
a new franchise.
The one Disney didn't put out.
Space
yeah.
goat.
Quick, make it a trademark.
Yeah, I know. New from Erie House. Space goat.
Wasn't it Disney that put out The Cat from Outer Space?
Yes, I think so.
Yes, it was, yes.
Yeah. But never did they tackle the goat.
No
goats.
Yeah, Ward Bond in this kind of surprised me. Of course, I knew him back from wagon train days. He was the wagon master before he kicked off.
You're older than I thought. Oh, you mean the TV show.
The TV show, yeah. But, go ahead.
He's going to wind up a bullwhip cracking when he said wagon train.
Yeah.
But I couldn't believe all the films that he had been in over 100. On the American Films Institute 100 Years, 100 Movies list, both the original and the 10th anniversary edition, Bond appears in the cast of more than any other actor. Always in the supporting roles, though. It Happened One Night, Bringing Up Baby, Gone with the Wind, Grapes of Wrath, The Maltese Falcon, It's a Wonderful Life, The Searchers. He appeared in 13 films that were nominated for Academy Award. Aerosmith, Lady for a Day, It Happened One Night, Dead End, You Can't Take It With You, Gone with the Wind, Grapes of Wrath, Long Voyage Home, Maltese Falcon, Sergeant York, It's a Wonderful Life, The Quiet Man, and Mr. Roberts. 23 films with John Wayne. The two went to school and played football together in college. And an urban legend about him, which was not true, urban myth states that country singer Johnny Horton died in an automobile accident while driving to see Bond in a hotel in Dallas to discuss a possible role in the fourth season of Wagon Train. And although Horton did indeed, he was killed in a car crash at 1:30 a.m. on November 5th, 1960, and Bond died from a heart attack at noon that same day. The two events were unrelated. Horton was en route to Austin from Austin to Shreveport, Louisiana, not Dallas, and Bond was in Dallas to attend a football game between the Southern Methodist University and Texas A&M at the Cotton Bowl.
Never got a final score.
Actually, that game ended in a scoreless tie. So there you go.
Ooh. There's a meaningless game right there, a scoreless tie. Why didn't we bother?
And a Cotton Bowl. Cheese and crackers, really?
Oh, I know.
Maybe that's why.
Fish? How about
that's maybe that's why Roy Clark never picked cotton. I don't know. Could be.
How about this? Car 7, wagon train 0.
There you go.
There you go.
The car always wins. Same thing when crossing the street. The car always wins.
Yeah, that's true.
Most of the time.
Always remember the car wins.
Are you getting over that cold over there, Dave? I heard a cough.
That's why I drive defensive. I drive a tank. So, you know.
Oh, okay.
That's a good thing. Tanks are good. until you try to fill the tank, then that's a problem.
Yep, yep.
Tanks are good unless you're in Tiananmen Square, wherever that was.
Yep.
Tiananmen Square? Yeah, that wasn't a good place.
That's pretty close. Yeah, that's pretty close. Tiananmen.
Hey, got a lot of radio, don't we? Yes, we do. Yes, we do. Let's continue now with the conclusion of Family Theater, The Visitor.
Coffee, Lieutenant?
No, not right now, thanks.
You want some more chocolate? Hey.
What?
Want me to make some more chocolate?
Oh, no, thanks.
What are you writing? A letter?
He's a newspaper man. He's going to make this place famous, aren't you, Mr. Anders?
Oh, you're writing your story, huh?
That's right.
My name is Mildred Wilson.
Oh, W-I-L-S-O-N?
Yeah. You get what I mean, huh?
Yeah, well, mine's Louis Anders. Just call me Lou.
How do you do?
Say, tell me, Millie. You don't mind if I call you Millie?
Not at all.
Tell me, Millie, why aren't you out on the field watching things? Aren't you interested?
Interested? I'm scared to death of that thing. I don't want to have anything to do with it.
Smart girl.
Well, at least I'm alive. I'd like to keep it that way.
I see.
That thing could be a big booby trap, you know?
And you're not the booby who's going to be trapped.
Yeah. In a manner of speaking, that's right.
Don't mind the lieutenant, Millie. He's just bitter. About it being a trap, though. You know that there's somebody inside the thing. A human being. Well, there wouldn't be a human being inside a bomb.
Oh, no? What about the kamikazes, huh? And who says it's a human being?
You read too much science fiction, Millie.
All I know is they've been trying to get that thing open since before it got dark so they can let out who knows what. And when they do...
Yes? Major Winters would like you and Mr. Anders to report to him immediately if he ever... See you.
Keep that light right on the opening. I want it flooded with light.
You want us, Major?
Oh, yes, Mr. Anders.
Yeah, looks like you're making quite a production out of this.
Lieutenant Woolley, you may return to your company. I'll take care of Mr. Anders. Captain Fake.
Sir?
I want cover. And remember, you're to fire and keep firing until this thing is completely destroyed if anything happens, whether we're out or not.
Yes, sir.
What's going on?
We're going inside, Mr. Anders. I thought you might like to come along. Of course, you realize that you might not come out again. You heard my last order?
Yes.
Well,
let's go.
Dr. Griffith?
I'm ready.
Let's go in.
It was a strange sensation entering the sphere. It seemed as we crossed that torn threshold that we were entering into another world. And as we found out later, that was really what we were doing. Major, look at all that equipment.
Looks like the inside of a radio.
Wonderful. I mean,
Wonderful workmanship. Very superior.
Dr. Griffith. Look.
Good evening, gentlemen. Don't be afraid. I'm old and really quite harmless.
What do you make of it, Doctor?
A human being? Strange proportions.
Look at his chest.
Large. He's from a much lighter atmosphere than ours.
Would you come closer so that I may see you? I would come to you, but I'm afraid the gravity is much too heavy for me. I have been wondering for a long time what you look like.
We've been wondering the same thing about you.
Yes, I know.
You know?
I have been listening to your radio programs for a short time. 10 years, to be exact.
10 years? They'll never believe this back at Palomar.
That is how I learned your language, listening to your radio. Some of your programs were very enjoyable. It made learning your language not so difficult as I thought it would be. According to some of the programs of about 2 or 3 o'clock in the day, the males have an easy time in life, while the females are always beset with difficulties. Is that right?
The soap operas.
He must have been listening to the soap operas. Oh, this is out of this world. A man from space flying around in our atmosphere listening to soap operas.
I was making a joke. You'll pardon me if I'm not very funny. I'm just learning. You see, we did not laugh on my planet.
Tell me, just why did you come here?
There was no other place to go. Life on my own planet had ceased to exist. It is the planet you call Mars.
Ceased to exist?
It was destroyed in our last war. I am the last.
You are the last? How do you know? I mean, how can you be sure?
You have not seen the great scar across the face of my planet?
The Great Canal of Mars.
Canal? No. Oh, no. It is the scar of our last war, some 300 years ago, by your time, caused by cosmic artillery. This ship, this little planet I've lived in for so long, was the relay station, the reflector for the burst that caused the scar.
Wait. If this is true, well, then all this equipment must contain the answer to cosmic energy.
How to transform the cosmic rays of the sun into tremendous energy. Is that true?
It is true. But I warn you, I have been listening to you, to your radio programs, to your news commentators, to the speeches of those in power all over your world. Your world is not ready for this knowledge.
Not ready.
Your planet, like mine, grows quickly in knowledge, but oh, so slow in understanding. Well,
so much good could be accomplished.
Good, yes. But there are forces here working against good, and they are very strong. I have been listening. These forces are trying to do what was done on my world. They are trying to force God out of your world.
Trying to force God out?
They exclude God from the conference table, as we did. They would make gods of science and state, as we did. They would deny him what is his due and run your world according to their own plan, which is a godless plan. And hear me, where God is not, there you will find only evil. Your world is in great danger now, and you must remove the danger. Bring God back to your conference tables, back into your homes and classrooms, and don't listen to those who tell you there is another way, a way without God. They will be lying to you. No man, no planet, no solar system can exist without God.
stab his arm.
Pretty dead.
I can't find any pulse.
He may not have any, Major. He seems to be made of a little different pattern than we are. Might be that the pressure here is too great for him. We'll have to get him to an iron lung or decompression chamber to find out.
I'll get some help. Medic! Medic!
The Martian visitor was kept in an iron lung and breathing almost pure oxygen till just 1 hour ago. And 1 hour ago, at 8:27 PST, the last living citizen of Mars, the first Martian ambassador to Earth, died. That's about as far as I've gone, Willard, except for the coroner's report and Major Winters. Oh, wait a minute. He's here with it now.
Now, this line right here, this will tell you what you want to know.
Wait a minute, Chief. Where?
Here.
Pneumonic plague.
Well, read the rest. It says it only looked like pneumonic plague.
Oh, yeah, I see. Hello, Willard. Get this. The Army sustained a news blackout for a time because the visitor was feared to have been carrying pneumonic plague, a highly contagious and usually fatal disease. However, the autopsy proved that death was brought on by the formation of nitrogen bubbles in his bloodstream. Yeah, you've heard about it. It's the same thing deep sea divers get from too much pressure. They call it the bends. And it says here he also had pulmonary complications. Breathing trouble. That's right.
Yeah.
Our air was just too heavy for him. Okay, that's all. But I'll call you if there's anything else. Well, that's that.
May I come in?
Oh, certainly, Dr. Griffith. Come in, have a chair.
Another 10 minutes and it'll be all over. And the secret of cosmic energy will be lost for perhaps another 1,000 years.
What are you talking about?
I set fire to the sphere, Mr. Andrews.
You what?
A few thermite bombs in the right places.
You see, Mr. Anders, Major Winters has done his share.
Oh, I see. You're taking the little man's advice.
I'm doing my best to.
Mr. Anders, weren't you saying something earlier this evening about being just the man to stir up public sentiment?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess I did, Doc. Say, let's go outside and take a closer look. Huh? You don't see a thing like this every day.
Well, I'd suggest you get some photographs and go, Anders, while you're still got time. I'm expecting some top brass to land here this evening. And when they find out what happened...
Find out what happened? Hey, Dr. Griffith, wouldn't you say that spontaneous combustion is a dangerous thing?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, I would. In fact, Captain Clegg and some of the other soldiers were talking with me about it just a few moments ago.
Hello, Major. Warm this evening, isn't it, sir?
Hello, man. Yes, it is a little warm, Captain.
Isn't it just terrible, sir, how careless some darn fools can be with a lit cigarette? There she goes.
Nothing left. Nothing at all.
Say, Major, your officers...
Sergeant, get that fire equipment out there.
Captain Clegg, what are you doing?
Major, I wouldn't want it to appear on the record that we didn't try to put that fire out.
You couldn't have that, sir.
Looks like we're going to be too late, though. Huh?
Too bad.
Was this your idea, Dr. Griffith?
Well, I just told your men what the Martian said, and, well, it seemed like it was everybody's idea.
Thank you, Doctor.
How do you feel about it, Mr. Anders?
Mm. Accidents will happen, Captain. Well, looks like there's nothing left but the story, so guess I'll pick up my pictures and go. Major Winters, I don't want to sound corny, but I'd like to shake your hand.
My pleasure, Mr. Anders.
I hope you're a good reporter, Mr. Anders. Yours is a pretty big job.
Reporter? I'm not a reporter anymore, haven't you heard, Doctor? I turned missionary just a few minutes ago.
Jane Wyatt again. Although there was a lot of fiction in tonight's play, there were some things in it that were definitely not fiction. Remember when our visitor said, "There are forces working to destroy you and your world?" That part, tragically, was very true. These forces are at work, and they are trying to exclude God from world activities. trying to replace him with science and state and to run the world according to their own godless plans. Now, we must wage a personal war against these forces, the communist and the secularist, and see that they make no further inroads here in the United States. How can we do it? We can do it by keeping God in the home through family prayer. For the home is the basic and most important unit of the nation. And family prayer, by bringing God into the home, by making him a part of the family, will strengthen the family and therefore strengthen the nation. Just as the family that prays together stays together, so too a world at prayer is a world at peace.
More things are wrought by prayer than this world dreams of. From Hollywood, Family Theater has brought you The Visitor, starring James Whitmore and Ward Bond. Jane Wyatt was your hostess. Others in our cast were Eve McVeigh, Dave Young, Tom Holland, Howard McNear, Bob Emlin, and Walter Brennan, Jr. The script was written by Robert Hugh O'Sullivan, with music composed and conducted by Harry Zimmerman, and was directed for Family Theater by Joseph F. Mansfield. This is Tony Lofrano expressing the wish of Family Theater that the blessing of God may be upon you and your home, and inviting you to join us next week when Family Theater will present Genius from Hoboken, starring Gene Peters and J. Carroll Nash. Join us, won't you?
Harold,
Family Theater is broadcast throughout the world and originates in the Hollywood studios of the world's largest network. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Isn't that a rock band, J. Carroll Nash Project?
The J. Carroll Nash Project, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. That's it. The project. I can't wait for this. I'm scared. Erie House Radio proudly presents Scar's Moral of the Story.
Funny thing about the bends, when you get them, the last thing you want to do is bend.
Yeah. Sounds like a bend to me.
Yes, okay. It was all about dreams.
Oh, I don't know. We haven't had that.
I did not get the T-shirt though. What was the T-shirt?
How do you spell that? I want to put that on a T-shirt. How do you spell that?
That's how you spell it.
Oh.
There you go.
Is that capitalized?
All of it. Yeah, all caps.
Okay.
All caps, okay.
Very good.
So did you work it out in your brain? I'm not going to say it out loud.
Nope.
Their tagline?
I did not.
I missed it.
The
family that da-da-da-da-da-da, you know, that whole
prays
thing.
Together, stays together?
Mm-hmm. Except in Tennessee, they changed it, and then they put it on a T-shirt. It's something different.
Or is they... Saturday morning cartoon, will the real Jerry Lewis stand up? The family that eats maple syrup together sticks together.
Ew.
Ew. I bet they do.
Ew.
I bet they do.
You know where to go to learn how to make ice cream?
I'm scared. No, I don't know.
Well, Sunday school.
Oh, that was. That doesn't even get a boing.
No boing for Dale.
I'm running around with no boinger. Oh, man.
There you go. All right. Hey, it'll get this. There you go. It gets one of them.
Devious.
Okay, shut up. Sorry.
That's what I was going to say. But you know,
whole lot of radio.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, at least
whole lot of radio.
We should have.
Yeah. Yeah.
Since the show's called Erie House Old Time Radio, we have some. That would be good.
You should have some.
Why am I lost? Yes.
Yes. Okay. Where to from here, kids? We've got...
Well, you can take a walk down the hall.
Let's take a walk down
the
hall.
Or we could go...
I like that idea.
Or we could end up in the workshop, you know.
Well, that's where you end up after you take your walk down the hall, I guess.
Oh, you walk down the hall to get to the workshop. I see. Okay.
That's right. That's right. Walk down the hall to get to the workshop.
I'll give that to you, Dave.
Hey, I got a Boeing, Dale. I got a Boeing.
Hey, there you go.
Well, don't show it to me.
Are you jealous?
Don't show it to me.
Are you jealous?
Just don't show it to me. I'll take your word for it. I believe you.
There are two sounds on this noise. There are two sounds on this the sound effect machine. You don't add. You don't do this and put another sound with it because that's just wrong.
Oh, it hurts when you do that.
Yeah, it hurts. Yeah,
that's like a
better. Oh, is that better?
Yep. No,
it's still hurt. Oh yeah.
Third pair today.
Oh, yeah. But you don't combine that with the boinger sound. Nope. Mm-mm.
Or the or the cuckoo clock. Can't combine it with the cuckoo clock either.
You could mix it with the cuckoo.
No, you can't do it with the cuckoo clock.
A zipper and a cuckoo clock.
Yeah, well, okay, yeah, I get it. All right, yeah. You could say that, yeah, that wouldn't. They don't even do that on the cartoons, that's right, yep.
They do. Yep. They do not.
Not even on The Simpsons. Not even on Family Guy. Yeah, they don't.
Simpsons
do
did it.
Did
they? I'm sure they did, yeah.
Actually, they pushed the envelope. See, something got me about The Simpsons. I know we got a whole lot of it, but when they said that The Simpsons is the longest-running television program in history, I was like, wait, no. I don't know. No. But it is.
The longest-running scripted television. television.
Gar, while you weren't looking, we all got old. Time.
I know.
Flies.
What the heck?
Time.
But it used to be a time where you would say, what's the answer to that question? You'd say, Gunsmoke. Nope.
Yeah.
Sorry. Nope.
Yeah, that was
the
default answer. Yeah.
It was. It used to be. Then we got old.
Then we got old. While we weren't looking.
Mm-hmm.
It always happens when you're not looking.
And now I don't want to look.
It always does.
So,
now we don't want to look.
Not now.
Pressing.
Oh, that is so wrong. Okay.
A lot of radio. So why not? Let's go down the hall as Gar suggested with a tale, and of course he means down the hall of fantasy, with a little tale called The Man from Second Earth. We'll get to find out what Second Earth actually is in this story.
Uh-huh.
And if I were to guess, let's say the original broadcast date was...
We do. And see, I went even further. Now I have a day. It was Monday, August 10th, 1953. I said I did the day on the other one, too. Good day.
You did.
Monday, August 10th, 1953.
It's coming down the hall.
Welcome to the series of radio dramas dedicated to the supernatural, the unusual, and the unknown. Come with me, my friend. We shall ascend the world of the unknown and forbidden, down to the depths where the veil of time is lifted and the supernatural reigns as king. Come with me and listen to the tale of The Man from the Second Earth.
Only when we gaze
not at the limitless reaches of space that we get any true perspective of man's place in the universe. Rarely do we forget the little worlds of our own making and pause to glance up at the beckoning call issued by the twinkling of other worlds far out in the murky blackness of space. Too many of us think of the stars as an indirect but very appropriate lighting system for a warm summer evening. We forget that each twinkle of light may represent another world, another sun, another solar system in which life may be present in a form similar or alien to our own. Only occasionally do we pause to think for a moment of what the heavens hold for the future of man. Carl Rasmussen was an associate of mine at the Research Institute. Though engaged in different fields of research, a strong friendship developed between us. Besides his work at the Institute, Carl was engaged on a project of his own, the study of the strange radio waves which emanated from various parts of the Milky Way. I didn't realize how far he'd progressed in his hobby until that day in the cafeteria.
And that's the extent of the progress we've made so far in our department.
I think you're doing pretty well.
I guess so. Bruce, you know about my work at home.
Yes, of course.
Why don't you come over tonight?
What happened?
You know, I've been trying to trace down the point at which those radio waves originate.
Yes.
Well, I've done it.
You know what causes them?
Yes, I do.
What?
An intelligent thinking being.
Are you sure?
I'm positive. And I've been able to decipher the message he's sending.
Have you told anyone else about this?
Not yet. I want to be absolutely sure, beyond a doubt. That's why I want you to come over this evening.
It's just that I wonder whether Sharon will enjoy having me over again.
Oh, she knows all about it. I want you there, Bruce. I want you to be the first to know what I've discovered.
I'll go back upstairs.
No, you stay here, too.
Well, I thought you wouldn't...
Nonsense. I want you here.
You've certainly got enough equipment, Carl.
And all the latest. I'll put it on now. It'll take a few seconds for it to warm up. What time is it?
8:30.
Well, we're right on time. I always begin receiving a signal at that time. A little more.
What's that low hum I hear?
That's the carrier wave. Yes, here it comes. He's a brilliant man. He's hopefully learned our language.
What does the message say?
See, I will try to converse with you tonight. Stand by.
How could he learn to speak our language?
I don't know, Rose. He said he was going to try, but that was about a week ago. I guess he...
Wait a minute. This may be it.
Can you answer him?
We're on the same wavelength, I think so. I am receiving you, Torkane.
And I, you. We have established contact with each other, though millions of light years apart. What is the name of your planet?
We call our planet Earth. What do you call yours?
We also call the planet Earth. And are you the satellite of a dying sun, as are we?
That's incredible.
No. Our sun will burn in the universe for ages to come.
You are lucky. Then how far progressed is your world? Our instruments recorded the radioactive blast some years ago. Have you harnessed atomic power? Can you travel in space?
We have really just begun to experiment with atomic power. But I'm afraid that for us, space travel is many years away. What about your people? The way you talk, you must have learned the secret of atomic power some time ago. But can you travel in space?
Yes. We have to learn the principles of space travel in order that we might save ourselves. For the time has come when an exploratory expedition must be sent out to discover a new world for us to inhabit. This is the last time I will contact you from here. This is Torkane signing off.
He's gone. He stopped sending.
Carl, I don't mean to doubt you, but are you sure this Torkane is real?
What do you mean?
Isn't it possible that someone's been playing a trick on you? A practical joke?
No, it's not, Bruce. I picked up the signal Torkane was sending several months before I was able to break it down and translate it. The radio waves actually came from somewhere in the Milky Way. Torkane said he'd been trying to establish contact with intelligent beings for almost 15 years. It was just recently that he directed the beam towards the Earth.
Carl, he said something about an exploratory expedition, and that this was the last time he was going to contact you from there. What did he mean by that?
Probably that he was going on the expedition.
Nothing else?
What else could he mean? I see what you're driving at, Sharon. Torkane said he inhabited a planet in a dying solar system. It seemed to me that he was quite anxious to learn of what progress we've made in the atomic field and space travel. Why would he want to know if we've mastered it?
Probably because he was curious.
I should think he'd be more curious as to what kind of life exists here, any number of things, before he'd even think of space travel.
That's right. And he also said that their instruments had recorded a radioactive blast some years ago. Seems to me they've been studying the Earth for a long time.
And why should they study our planet so closely unless the exploratory expedition intends to come here to get a first-hand view of the Earth?
You mean you think he intends coming to the Earth?
Yes.
Well, then, think of what that'll mean to us, Bruce. Obviously, they're centuries ahead of us in technological progress. Think what they can teach us.
But what if they don't want to teach us, Carl? What if they want to conquer us, to destroy us?
Well, why should they want to do that?
Because their sun is dying. They must find a new planet to inhabit or die with it. I think Bruce is right.
I don't think so. I think he's like most of us, afraid of anything new. If Torkane does come here, I'm sure it'll be in peace.
Return to the Hall of Fantasy and the tale of The Man from the Second Earth in just a moment. Back now to the Hall of Fantasy and the tale of The Man from the Second Earth.
It was almost 5 weeks later that the report appeared in the papers concerning the mysterious disappearance of the farmer who had called the police. The story leaked out and the newspapers carried the headlines, "Who Was It?" blazoned across their lead pages. At the time, I didn't connect the farmer's disappearance with what had gone before, but I've learned soon that there was a definite connection. Hello?
May I speak to Bruce Marshall?
This is Bruce, Sharon.
Oh, Bruce. Bruce, I wish you'd come over tonight. I'm afraid something's going to happen.
Is anything wrong?
Not yet. But last night, Carl received a call from someone. I don't know who it was, and he wouldn't tell me anything about it.
Well, that's nothing to get worried about.
I'm not so sure about that, Bruce. Did you read the report in the papers about the farmer?
Yes.
Do you think they have arrived?
I don't know.
That's why I want you to come over tonight, Bruce. I want you to see Carl and talk to him before it's too late.
Carl, who called last night? Was it Torkane?
Yes. Then he did come here?
2 days ago.
And the farmer we read about in the papers.
Torkane said the farmer tried to kill him. He was only protecting himself.
By following him into the house and killing him?
The farmer's not dead. He's being held captive on the ship.
Where is it?
I don't know. He wouldn't tell me. But Torkane said he came in peace. He doesn't want his presence known because he's afraid it might panic our people. That's why he's had to ensure secrecy.
The papers played in a big...
The people will forget about it in time.
Who's that?
It must be Torkane. Let him in.
Oh, Bruce... I'm afraid.
Maybe there's nothing to be afraid of, Sharon. If Carl is right, then Torkane did come here in peace.
I thought you would be alone.
So did I, but they already know about you. They were with me when we spoke together.
They will not mention me?
I know they won't. One is my wife, the other a good friend and colleague.
Then let us proceed.
You look so much like us.
Why should I not look like you? Our worlds are very much alike. We, too, are warm-blooded creatures who developed as you did here on your Earth. Our world is much like yours, only it is older and dying as our sun is dying.
Why have you come here, Torkane?
To see my friend, Rasmussen. I come in peace.
So I understand.
Then there is nothing to be afraid of, is there?
That's right.
I must ask a favor of you, Rasmussen.
Anything you want.
I request that we be allowed to store some equipment here in your house. That I be allowed to stay here with you.
Of course. You can stay as long as you like.
We can exchange many ideas, you and I, which may benefit both of us.
I'm sure we can. When would you like to move in your equipment?
Tonight, if possible.
Can you do it tonight?
I was sure you would agree to my plan. My equipment is waiting outside.
We'll help you if you like.
No. It is very delicate. My own people will handle it for me. Where may we place it?
In the basement.
Many thanks. One other thing.
Yes.
This does not concern you, Rasmussen, but rather your friend. As long as we remain here, I would suggest that you stay also.
Why?
You are a colleague of Rasmussen's. I should be interested in talking to you, exchanging ideas which may be mutually beneficial. I don't
think... Bruce, please stay.
All right. I'll leave now and come back tomorrow with my friends.
Let me know where your possessions are, and one of my people will get them for you. I should hate to have you leave us tonight. Now I will tell my people to bring in our equipment. After we are settled, I shall see you again.
Bruce, what time is it?
Almost 11:30.
Oh, Carl is still down there with them. I wish he'd come back upstairs.
He hasn't been gone long. He'll be back up in a minute.
Bruce, did you notice Torkane's face? Waxy and shining. It didn't seem real. It looked like a mannequin one might see in a store. And, Bruce, maybe I imagined it, but I thought it changed while he was in here, that it took on new lines, new features while he was talking to us.
Yes. I thought my eyes were going back on me, but his face did seem to change. I'd almost swear that it did.
Someone's coming. Oh, it's you, Carl.
Yes, it's I.
Anything wrong, Carl?
I don't know, Bruce. Remember when Torkane first walked in here? He seemed so tall and thin. Downstairs, his shape seemed to be changing. It lost form, seemed to become fluid, and then would harden back into shape when he looked at me.
Then we were right. Carl, I think Torkane assumed the form of a man when he came here tonight. I don't think his body is solid. I think his true form is a semi-liquid state which he can harden and assume any figure he likes. I think he's made up of a mass of living matter.
What's that?
Someone screamed.
The farmer. He was down there.
We'd better see what happened.
Right, you stay here, Sharon.
Sharon.
Did you talk to him when you were down there?
The farmer? Yes.
Was he all right?
Yes, but he seemed a little dazed. Torkane?
All the lights are out down there. The only light is streaming through this doorway. Look.
Yes, I see him.
Do not come down here.
We heard a scream.
I'll take a look at the farmer. You keep Torkane talking.
Right. Why is it so dark down here?
We are resting.
Why did he scream?
He was frightened.
Why don't you let him come upstairs with us?
He will remain with us.
There's nothing wrong with him, is there?
Nothing. He's all right.
Let's go. I've seen enough.
We'll go back upstairs then.
Do not come down here again unless we call you.
Bruce, was he all right?
All right, nothing. He was stabbed.
What?
That's right. There was some kind of wet, oozing substance all over him that seemed to be alive.
I heard something down there, Bruce. Like the bubbling of water. And yet not like it.
No, it was too thick to be water. Carl, I think there's something down there that could very well destroy us all. This thing you spoke to from the other planet Earth isn't a man at all, but an oozing, undulating, living mass of matter bent on our destruction.
You are listening to The Man from the Second Earth on this week's journey down the corridors of the Hall of Fantasy. We'll return to our story in just a moment.
And from the Hall of Fantasy to the corridors of Eerie House. We're back. Aren't we?
Nice segue.
Yeah. Sorry.
Just don't drive off the cliff with that segue.
Yeah. it's oobleck. That stuff is oobleck. You know what oobleck is, don't you?
No.
I think I got some on the bottom of my shoe the other day.
Yeah, you went, ooh, black. No, it's...
Yeah.
Don't you remember Bartholomew and the Oobleck? It's a Dr. Seuss.
Dr. Seuss?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I didn't get that high in the Dr. Seuss series, I guess.
Well, it was
stuck
the day
on
before
Hop
you were
on
born,
Pop. Dave. Well, I was stuck on Hop on Pop, and I hopped on his a little too often. he took away the rest of my Dr. Seuss books.
I remember these from a long time ago, and Oobleck was like this green snotty stuff that fell from space.
Yeah.
And no one believed Bartholomew, I guess, that it was going to happen.
Right. Is Dr. Seuss and his verve on Henny Penny and the acorn that fell on the head, sort of, maybe. Yeah. Except
Henny.
It was Bartholomew and Oobleck, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can we go that far? Can we?
Yeah. Why not? Go wherever you like.
Sure.
Good night.
Henny Penny. Good night. Freaking Henny Penny. I'm Henny Penny over here. And the sky is falling.
Yeah.
And then there was that serious owl that said, oh, Henny Penny, it's just an acorn.
Yeah.
Right?
You got hit in the head. Yes.
How many
good boys?
Could be.
Yeah.
Could be.
Yeah.
Could be.
Oh, man.
I like that. There's. Yep.
You like what?
Henny Penny.
Oh, yeah.
She's
Henny Penny,
girl.
It's just an acorn. Fell from a tree, you silly bird.
The bird.
He's a silly bird over there.
I didn't get that far in Dr. Seuss either.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Oh,
well, there you go.
Righty then.
Hello, radio.
No, we're actually not doing too bad on time. But
okay.
We could just finish with the conclusion of Hall of Fantasy. This is a short segment. We'll be back in about 7 minutes and 25 seconds.
There you go.
And now, back to our story. An original tale of fantasy featuring Jim Amici, entitled The Man from the Second Earth.
We stood there in the hallway beside the door which led to the cellar and the things that were downstairs. Carl and I had heard a scream, and when we had gone down there to investigate, we found the farmer lying dead on the stairs. This thing you spoke to from the other planet Earth isn't a man at all, but an oozing, undulating, living mass of matter bent on our destruction.
When we saw him, he looked like a man.
I know. Evidently, they can solidify themselves when they need to, can assume any shape they desire, but they can't hold it for long intervals of time because the features change, melt into each other. Torquin seemed in a hurry to get downstairs. Evidently, they can't remain in a solid state too long.
Who screamed?
We better tell her.
What happened down there?
The man they held captive is dead.
Then they're not friendly.
No, they're not.
What are we going to do?
Well, I'm going to call the police.
What's the matter?
The line's dead.
Dead? But how could the...
Look.
Where?
At the window. Looks like a heavy layer of oil is covering the glass.
You're right.
Look! It's moving.
I'm going to see if I can open the window. I can't seem to move it. Tight.
What about the doors?
Don't even bother. We won't be able to open them. Torquin took care of that, too.
But we have to do something. We
should never have established contact with him.
He'd have established contact with someone else, then. Evidently, the conditions here on our planet are equivalent to the conditions that prevail on theirs.
But there must be other planets in the universe where the same conditions exist. In all the vast reaches of space, surely there must be others that approximate the Earth.
That's right. They must have come here for a definite reason.
But of all the planets in the universe, why would they choose ours?
I can explain that to you.
He's right in back of us.
How did you get up here?
I came up quietly. I did not want to alarm you.
What about the farmer?
What about him?
Is he still all right?
Yes.
You're lying. He was dead when we left him.
You know, then?
Yes. What did you do to him?
That is one of the answers as to why we came to your Earth.
By coincidence, we named our planet Earth also. But life on your planet followed a different evolutionary pattern than did life on ours. Your life developed from the one-celled creature spawned in the depths of the sea. You became the animal you call man, with its disadvantages of never being able to change your form. We still are the protoplasmic beings that once you were. Only we developed along that evolutionary line, and you did not.
That still doesn't explain why...
I am coming to that. You live on energy converted from plant and animal life. So do we.
Why did you come here?
Because the slow death of our sun has destroyed all but a small portion of the plant and animal life on our world. There is not enough heat, and we can no longer sustain ourselves. On your planet, there is an abundance of both. On your planet, we shall establish a new world. What are you doing?
Lighting a cigarette.
That is what you call fire? Let me see it.
The matches? Why?
I want to see them.
Here.
I thank you. On our world, we never had a use for these. It is like a tiny sun. How brightly it glows, and it is too warm.
You shouldn't have held it so long, Torchain.
I do not like this thing you call fire.
Look, Carl. His hand. It's melting.
You have not much longer to live. Enjoy your last minute.
What does he mean?
He means they intend to kill us soon.
We've got to get away from here.
How? What can we do?
There must be some way to destroy them.
How can you destroy a living mass of matter?
Let's try to figure it out logically. They left their own planet because their sun was dying and unable to support adequate life. They fear the cold, so they'd freeze into a solid and be unable to move.
But it's the middle of summer, and we don't have any refrigeration equipment downstairs.
I know, but what's the opposite of freezing?
Heat. Boiling. Burning.
That's right. Did you notice what happened to his hand when he was holding that match?
Yes, it began to melt.
That's right. And he seemed afraid of it. I think there are only two ways to destroy these beings. Either to freeze them... or to burn them.
We can't freeze them.
But we can burn them.
How?
This house will burn.
But we can't get out. We'll burn with it.
Maybe not. The window wouldn't move, but it might break. We can get out that way.
Well, what if it won't break?
That's the chance we'll have to take.
Let's start ripping the curtains and drapes down, Bruce. They'll burn the easiest.
Right.
Let's go.
I'll go open the gas burners in the kitchen.
Good girl. That'll help it along.
I'll be right back.
Yeah. Pile them up over here alongside the wall.
All right. I just hope the rest of the house catches.
So do I. If it catches and the gas gets dense enough, it should explode.
There's some more over here. Sharon!
I'm coming.
Hurry!
I've got everything open in there. The oven, the burners, everything.
I can smell it from here.
Well, that's the last of the curtains.
Look! Seeping under the doorway.
They must have smelled the gas.
Oh, light the fire. Hurry!
It's seeping through faster.
It's swelling up on all sides of the door.
It'll break through the door in a minute. It won't hold much longer. The
fire's catching hold. We've got to get out of here.
Let's go.
Use that chair in the window.
I will.
Hurry.
Let's hope it breaks. Here we go. Get worse. Climb through in a hurry.
All right, here. Help.
There, now.
Run as fast as you can.
The fire seems to be dying down.
They're trying to smother it. If only the...
Like we can save it.
That's all right.
What did you have down in your basement anyway? Some chemicals?
Yes.
I've never seen anything burn like that before. Yeah, I'd better get back.
Well,
I didn't think we would.
I'll never forget it as long as I live.
But it's open.
Yes, for a while. Who can tell what will happen in the future? What other forms of life are present in those stars you see? What else will come from out of the sky?
So runs tonight's tale of the unusual, the terrifying, the unknown. Join us again when next we journey down the corridors of the Hall of Fantasy. To hear another strange tale of the supernatural. All characters and events portrayed in these programs are fictional, and any similarity to actual events or persons, living or dead, is purely coincidental.
The goat's real. It's real to me. I'm That wraps up Hall of Fantasy. Very dramatic. Very dramatic. Uh-huh.
Very dramatic indeed.
Yeah. Eerie House Radio proudly presents yet another Gar's Moral of the Story.
Last time I checked, the fire triangle never included an oozing, undulating, living mass of matter bent on your destruction. Now we know why.
He's afraid of the oobleck.
Yeah. No, I can just stub his toe. How you just stub his toe?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes.
Hello?
Hello.
Yes, we're just ignoring you. Oh, no.
Yeah.
No.
Oh, all right. For that, I give you the cuckoo. Okay, there you go.
Uh-oh. And we deserve it.
The more cuckoo, the better.
Yes.
They really like that. Oozing, undulating, living mass of matter bent on your destruction. They used it twice. It took up half of the entire episode.
That was big in 53, yeah.
Yeah, undulating.
Yeah, that was a lot of words.
Pretty descriptive stuff. Oh. Not as bad as a chicken heart, but pretty close.
Yeah.
So we got an interesting tale and this interesting title for our next tale from CBS Radio Workshop.
Yep, featuring another one of our favorites, Mr. Dick Beals.
There you go.
Where are we?
Got some information on him at the break, but yeah. and you can quote the goat on that.
Yes.
Yep.
Anywho, it's CBS Radio Workshop, The Little Prince. And,
yes, a little one.
Do we have an original broadcast date on this guy?
Yes, we do. Friday. May 25th, 1956.
CBS Radio presents the CBS Radio Workshop, dedicated to man's imagination. The theater of the mind. Tonight's presentation, The Little Prince, by the late Antoine de Saint-Exupéry.
The long title.
Years ago, I had an accident with my airplane in the desert of Sahara. Something was broken in my engine. Being alone, I set myself to attempt the difficult repairs. It was a question of life or death. I had only enough drinking water to last about a week. The first night, I went to sleep on the sand 1,000 miles from any human habitation. You can imagine my amazement when at sunrise I was awakened by an odd little voice.
If you please, draw me a sheep.
What?
Draw me a sheep.
I jumped to my feet completely thunderstruck. I saw a most extraordinary small person who stood examining me with great seriousness. He seemed neither to be fainting from fatigue or hunger, or thirst or fear. When I was able to speak, I said, "What are you doing here?"
"If you please, draw me a sheep."
I don't know how to draw.
"That doesn't matter. Draw me a sheep."
When I was only 6, I had drawn a picture of a boa constrictor from the outside, digesting an elephant. The grown-ups couldn't understand it. They told me it looked like a hat. They advised me to lay aside my drawing and devote myself to geography, history, arithmetic, and grammar. I did because it's tiresome for children to be always and forever explaining things to them.
"Would you please draw me a sheep?"
The little fellow was so insistent, I took out my pen and some paper. Since I had never drawn a sheep, I drew for him my picture of the boa constrictor that looked like a hat.
No, no, no. I do not want an elephant inside a boa constrictor. A boa constrictor is very dangerous, and an elephant is cumbersome. Where I live, everything is very small. What I need is a sheep. Please draw me one.
I made several attempts. Then, being in a hurry to start working on my engine, I tossed off a drawing of a box that had some air holes in it and explained that the sheep was inside.
That is exactly the way I wanted it. Do you think the sheep will require a great deal of grass?
Oh, there will surely be enough. It's a very small sheep I've given you.
Not so small. Look through the air hole. My sheep has gone to sleep.
It took me a long time to learn where he came from. It was only from words dropped by chance that, little by little, everything was revealed to me. I learned, for example, that the little prince came from another planet, and that his planet was scarcely any larger than a house. I should remind the grown-ups that in addition to the great planets, there are hundreds of others, some too small to be seen through telescopes, called asteroids, which are designated by numbers. The planet the little prince came from is asteroid B612. As each day passed, I would learn more about the little prince's planet. On the third day, I heard about the catastrophe of the baobabs.
Isn't it true that sheep eat little bushes?
Yes, that's true.
Then it follows they also eat baobabs.
Baobabs? But it would take a herd of elephants to eat anything as gigantic as a baobab.
Before they grow so big, don't baobabs start out by being little?
Entirely correct. But why do you want the sheep to eat the little baobabs?
I knew a planet inhabited by a lazy man. He neglected three little bushes.
What happened?
Catastrophe. The baobabs spread over the entire planet, bored clear through it with their roots, split it in pieces.
So you must be careful.
It is a question of discipline. I must attend to my planet each morning, as I do myself. It's tedious. I need the sheep.
On the fifth day, thanks to the sheep, the secret of the little prince's life was revealed to me.
If a sheep eats little bushes, does it eat flowers
too? A sheep eats anything it finds in its reach.
Even flowers that have thorns?
Yes, even flowers that have thorns.
The thorns? What use are they?
Don't you ever let go of a question once you've asked it. Can't you see I'm busy fixing my plane? There's so little drinking water left, I must finish the repairs.
But you haven't answered my question.
All right. The thorns are of no use at all. Flowers have thorns just for spite.
Oh, I don't believe you. Flowers are weak creatures. They are naive. They reassure themselves as best they can. They believe that their thorns are terrible weapons. And you actually believe that the flowers...
No, I don't believe anything. I answered you the first thing that came into my head. Now, don't you see, I'm very busy with matters of consequence.
Matters of consequence? You talk just like the grown-ups. The flowers have been growing thorns for millions of years. For millions of years, the sheep have been eating them just the same. It is not a matter of consequence to try to understand why the flowers go to so much trouble to grow thorns which are never of any use to them.
Now, just a moment.
If I knew one flower which is unique in the universe, which grows nowhere but on my planet, which one little sheep can destroy in a single bite some morning without even noticing what he is doing, you think that is not important?
I'm sorry. I didn't realize. Now, the flower you love is not in danger. I'll draw you a muzzle for your sheep. I'll draw you a railing to put around your flower. I didn't know what else to say to him. Night had fallen. I'd let my tools drop from my hand. Of what moment now was my hammer, or thirst, or death? There was a little prince to be comforted. I felt awkward and blundering. I didn't know how I could reach you. It's such a secret place, the land of tears. That's why you left your tiny home on asteroid B612. It was love. Love for a flower. A flower unique in all the universe.
At first, I was captivated by her beauty. Very quickly, she began to torment me with her vanity. And soon I came to doubt her.
Was she the only flower on your planet?
Oh, no. But the others are very simple. They take up no room. Cause not one bit of trouble.
Your flower was different.
Very. She came from a seed blown to my planet from who knows where. From the moment she first showed herself, she became demanding. She commanded all of my time. Even that time I had always devoted to the baobabs in my volcanoes.
Volcanoes?
I have two active volcanoes. Very convenient for heating my breakfast. I carefully clean them out every morning. If they are well cleaned out, volcanoes burn slowly and steadily, without eruption.
I see.
I also have one volcano that is extinct. I clean it out, too. One never knows.
No, one never knows. You were telling me about your flower.
I ought never to have run away from her. I ought to have judged her by deeds and not by words. I ought to have guessed that behind her poor little stratagems lay real affection for me. But I was too young to know how to love her. The fact is that I did not know how to understand anything.
And so it was that the little prince fled from the proud flower he loved but could not understand. To escape from his planet, the little prince took advantage of the migration of a flock of wild birds. He found himself in the neighborhood of asteroids number 325, 326, 27, 28, and 329. He began to visit them in order to add to his knowledge. The first asteroid was inhabited by a king clad in a royal purple and ermine who was seated upon a magic throne. The king was elated when he saw the little prince coming.
Ah, the subject. The proof that I miss you better.
The king felt consumingly proud of being at last king over somebody. The little prince looked everywhere for a place to sit down, but the entire planet was crammed and obstructed by the king's magnificent robe. So he remained standing. Since he was tired, he yawned.
It is contrary to etiquette to yawn in the presence of a king. I forbid you to do so.
I can't help it. I have come on a long journey and have had no sleep.
Ah, then I order you to yawn. Come now, yawn again. That's an order.
That frightens me. I cannot anymore.
Well, then I order you sometimes to yawn and sometimes not to. Look here, I insist that my authority be respected. I tolerate no disobedience. I am an absolute monarch. However, I always make my orders reasonable.
That is very wise.
Oh, of course. If I offered a general to change himself into a seabird and he did not, it would be my fault, not his.
May I sit down?
Yeah, I order you to do so. Here, I shall move my robe.
Sire, I beg that you will excuse my asking a question.
I order you to ask me a question.
Sire, you are alone here. This planet is tiny. Over what do you rule?
Over everything.
Over everything? You mean the other planets and all the stars?
Oh, over all that.
Oh, that's marvelous. You can see a sunset whenever you wish. Oh, sire, I should like to see a sunset. Do me that kindness. Order the sun to set.
If I ordered a general to fly from one flower to another like a butterfly, or write a tragic drama, or change himself into a seabird, and if he did not, which of us would be wrong?
You.
Exactly. One must require from each one only the duty he can perform. I have the right to require obedience because my orders are reasonable.
But my sunset?
You shall have it. I shall command it.
When, sire?
Mm-hmm. Well, I shall consult my almanac. Here we are. That will be this evening, about 20 minutes to 8. And when I give the order, you see how well I'm obeyed.
I see. Oh, I have nothing more to do here, so I shall set out on my way again.
Oh, do not go. Do not go. I'll make you a minister.
Minister of what?
Minister of Justice. Yeah, that's it, Minister of Justice.
But there is nobody here to judge.
Hmm? Well, then you shall judge yourself. It's far more difficult to judge oneself than to judge others.
I can judge myself anywhere.
I have good reason to believe that somewhere on my planet there is an old rat. You can judge this old rat. And from time to time you will condemn him to death. You will have to pardon him on each occasion. He must be treated thriftily. He's the only one we have.
I wouldn't like that. I think I will go on my way.
Oh, no.
I am ready to depart. If your majesty wishes to be promptly obeyed, he should be able to give me a reasonable order.
Very well. I order you to be gone by the end of 1 minute. The conditions seem favorable. And hear this. I make you my ambassador.
The grown-ups are very strange.
The second planet was inhabited by a conceited man who thought the little prince had come to admire him.
Ah, I am about to receive a visit from an admirer.
Good morning. That is a queer hat you are wearing.
It is a hat for salute. I raise it in salute when people acclaim me. Ho-ho. Unfortunately, nobody at all ever passes this way.
Oh?
Clap your hands one against the other.
All right.
You see? I now raise my hat in salute.
Do it again.
Thank you. Thank you. Wouldn't you like to applaud me again?
Well, no.
But you really do admire me.
What do you mean?
Well, you regard me as the handsomest, the best dressed, the richest and most intelligent man on this planet.
But you're the only man on your planet.
Well, do me this kindness. Admire me just the same.
Very well. I admire you.
Ah, thank you. Thank you. And goodbye.
Now, what is there in that to interest him so much? The grown-ups are certainly very odd.
Call them the Grups. Remember that episode of Star Trek? The grown-ups, the Grups.
Oh,
trust
okay.
Not the Grups. Yeah.
Let me give you a little bit on Dick Beals here. We hear him a lot in a lot of the suspenses. Richard Beals was born March 16, 1927, in Detroit, Michigan. He never went through puberty, was only 4'7", and weighed just under 70 pounds.
What?
He had a normal childhood in suburban Detroit. After graduating from high school, attended Michigan State University, majored in broadcasting. Dick always dreamed of being a sportscaster. He loved sports, was a member of the MSU cheerleading squad. He actually dressed like a girl with skirt, fake breasts made from balloons, and a long blonde wig. However, the staff at WKAR Radio at Michigan State knew the best place for Dick was in radio drama. In 49, a few months before his graduation from MSU, he was called on a radio station, WXYZ, the station which brought such programs as The Lone Ranger, Sergeant Preston, and The Green Hornets. In Detroit to perform a commercial. From that time, he began acting in programs heard on the station in child parts. In 52, he was called by an advertising agency to be the voice of Speedy, animated spokesman for Alka-Seltzer, after he was heard on an episode of The Green Hornet. He moved to Los Angeles and quickly became involved as a voice actor for other products, Oscar Mayer, Vaseline, Campbell's Soup, and Bob's Big Boy. He was heard on a great many radio dramas from the OTR's final decade, most notably Gunsmoke. A lot of Gunsmoke, but also, like I said, a lot of suspenses. His voice became one of the most familiar voices in America. He was Davy on the Lutheran TV series Davy and Goliath. It says he was Gumby, but he actually denied that in 1991. He did cartoons for Warner Brothers. Remember that one about the boy with all the imagination, the Ralphie?
Oh, yeah. That was one of the later ones.
Yeah. It was, and it actually was nominated for an Academy Award. That was him. As well as additionally, he could also be seen on television, a TV series in which he was a ventriloquist dummy or an alien from outer space. So
Wait, back up a bit.
Yep.
You said this man never went through puberty?
No.
Never went through puberty, like Walter Tetley did, who was Leroy. Nope, not ever. Like Leroy, and, of course, he was also Sherman and Peabody. Sherman and Peabody from Bullwinkle. He was Sherman. He was a licensed airplane pilot. He had no problem flying most small plane with controlled extensions. There you go.
Yes. Okay, the other thing was you said he cross-dressed. Yes?
Well, when he was a cheerleader, for good old MSU.
Good for him.
The guy had challenges.
There you go.
He never went through puberty. Jeez.
Yeah.
I don't
cut him some slack.
Uh-huh. Well, Shakespeare, in the Shakespeare Theater back in the times, they used men dressed up as women because there were no female actresses allowed, I believe.
Right.
So,
did you know that ballet was originally performed by men?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's true. Can't go there.
It might be true.
I don't know. I've heard you call Twinkle Toes before, so you must have gone
there
once.
Only behind closed doors. Those doors are open, Dave. What are you doing? What are you doing to me there, Dave? You're outing me
Twinkle
on radio.
Toes. Twinkle Toes, yes.
We call it Twink for short. there you go.
Hey, wait, we got one more. Yeah, there you go. All right. Twinkle Toes.
That was a good Twinkle Toes sound effect, I think.
It is. It's great. I don't know why you guys don't, have a cowbell, all the time.
More cowbell.
There you go.
More cowbell.
More cowbell. More cowbell. Yeah. Now, see, I was wrong.
It makes me hungry for hamburgers. That's why.
Oh, okay. Okay. There.
Tis the season.
The Little Prince. I thought that there were animated aspects of The Little Prince shown on the Captain Kangaroo television program. Am I wrong?
Yeah, probably.
I don't remember that.
Okay.
But then I only went so far in Dr. Seuss' book, so I don't know,
Right, yeah.
Just practicing Oobleck and all will be well.
Oh, okay. Well, I did find that The Little Prince is animated, but some of these are much later than... But I recall it was a kid with a purple crayon and he would...
That's Harold.
That was Harold.
Harold had the purple crayon. Well, that destroys... Okay,
that was
Shel
Silverstein,
wasn't it? Yeah, I think so.
Guy who wrote some music for Dr. Hook. Enough of that trivia. We got just enough time to wrap up CBS Radio Workshop. This wonderful little story, The Little Prince.
The third planet belonged to a businessman. This man was so much occupied that he did not even raise his head at the little prince's arrival.
3 and 2 make 5. 5 and 7.
Good morning.
Good morning. 15.
Your cigarette has gone out.
22. I haven't had time to light it again. That makes 501,622,731.
500 million what?
I can't stop. I've got too much to do. I'm concerned with matters of consequence.
$500 million what?
During the 54 years I've inhabited this planet, I've been disturbed only twice by inconsequential balderdash. This is the third time. I was saying 501
million...
Millions
of what?
Those little objects one sometimes sees in the sky.
Flies?
No, little glittering objects. The ones that set lazy men to idle dreaming.
You mean the stars.
That's right.
And what do you do with the stars?
Nothing. I own them.
But I have already seen a king who told me...
Kings do not own. They reign over. It's very different. And it makes me very rich.
What good does it do you to be rich?
Well, it makes it possible for me to buy more stars, if any are discovered.
How is it possible for one to own the stars?
To whom do they belong?
To nobody.
Then they belong to me, because I was the first to think of it.
I suppose that is true, but what do you do with them?
I administer them, count them, recount them. It's difficult, but I am a man who is interested in matters of consequence.
You cannot pluck the stars from heaven.
No, but I can put them into the bank.
Whatever does that mean?
I write the number of my stars on a paper. I put the paper into a drawer and lock it with a key.
Is that all?
That is enough.
That is rather poetic, but of no great consequence.
Your ideas about matters of consequence are quite different from those of grown-ups.
Quite. I myself own a flower, which I water every day. I own three volcanoes, which I clean out every day. It is of some use to my volcanoes and my flowers that I own them. You are of no use to the stars.
Balderdash! Now, let's see, where was I? 342, 77 plus 89...
The grown-ups are altogether extraordinary.
Tell me, how did you come to visit this planet, the Earth?
It was recommended by a geographer on the fifth planet I visited.
Do you like it? Do you intend to stay?
It has been almost a year since I left my home, my flower, my volcanoes. I'm worried.
Baobabs?
I left them under control.
Your flower, then?
On my journey, I learned many things. I learned that flowers are in danger of speedy disappearance. Soon I must return.
It had been 8 days since my accident in the desert. The last drop of my water supply was gone. The little prince seemed not to guess the danger. A little sunshine was all he seemed to need. He was recounting some of his experiences after coming to our planet.
I met a friend. He was a fox.
My dear little man, this is no longer a matter that could have anything to do with a fox.
Why not?
I am about to die of thirst.
I'll tell you about it as we go, then. Come, let us look for a well.
It's absurd to look for a well at random in the immensity of the desert.
When I arrived on the Earth, I was surprised not to see any people. It was explained to me that I had landed on the desert.
Your friend the fox told you this?
No, it was a little gold-colored snake. A funny little animal. No thicker than a finger.
A little yellow snake, but they're deadly.
Not deadly. But more powerful than the finger of a king.
He could have struck you fatally.
He told me he could help me someday. If I grew too homesick for my planet, he told me all I need do is come back to the place where I descended. He would meet me there.
Are you so homesick then?
It is very close to the anniversary of my arrival. At that time, my planet will be right overhead.
I shall be unhappy if you go.
That is what the fox said. It was his fault. He wanted me to tame him.
Tame him?
It was when I wandered into a garden filled with flowers. There were thousands of them, precisely alike. They called themselves roses. I was brokenhearted.
Because of the roses?
They were all exactly like my flower. A flower I thought to be unique in all the universe.
Oh.
The fox made me understand, to have hope again. He wanted me to tame him because it would establish ties and make him different from all the other foxes.
I'm beginning to understand.
I looked again at the roses. They were beautiful, but one would not die for them. My rose is more important than all the others because it is she that I have watered. It is she I have put under a glass globe, sheltered from the wind behind a screen. Listened to when she grumbled or boasted. She is my rose.
And your friend the fox?
When I met him, he was as yet nothing. Just a fox like thousands of other foxes. But I have made him my friend. And now he is unique in all the world.
You have learned a secret. A simple secret. It's only with the heart that one can see rightly.
What is essential is invisible to the eye.
Men have forgotten that you become responsible forever for what you obtained.
I am responsible for my rules.
When we had trudged along for several hours in silence, the darkness fell and the stars came out. The little prince dropped off to sleep. I took him in my arms and set out walking once more. I felt the need of protecting him as if he himself were a flame that might be extinguished by a little puff of wind. I walked on, and I found the well at daybreak.
Now, you must keep your promise, you know. The muzzle for my sheep.
I remember. I'm afraid it's not very good.
This will be all right.
You have plans I don't know about.
Tomorrow will be the anniversary of my descent to the Earth.
And your star will be just above?
You must return to your work on the engine now. I will be waiting here. Come back tomorrow evening.
I'm a little frightened.
Remember the fox. One runs the risk of weeping a little if one lets himself be tamed.
I was not reassured. I did not want to lose my little friend. I pretended to go, but returned and hid behind a rock. I could not see to whom the little prince was speaking.
This is the exact spot, the right time. You have good poison. You are sure you will not make me suffer too long.
My heart jumped to my throat. I looked around the rock. Before me, facing the little prince, was one of those yellow snakes that take just 30 seconds to end your life. I dug into my pocket for my gun and started to run. The snake let himself flow across the sand like the dying spray of a fountain and disappeared among the stones. What does this mean? Why are you talking with snakes?
You will find out what is wrong with your engine today, and you can go back home. I, too, am going home today. It is much farther, much more difficult.
I want you to stay a while longer.
I have your sheep and the sheep's fox, and I have the muzzle.
Little man, I want to hear you laugh again. Tell me it's only a bad dream, this affair of the snake, the meeting place. The star?
At night you will look up at the stars. My star will be just one of the stars for you. You will love to watch all of the stars in the heavens. They will be your friends. I am making you a present.
Little prince, dear little prince. I love to hear that laughter.
That is my present. Just that.
What are you trying to say?
For most people, the stars are silent. You alone will have the stars as no one else has them.
I don't understand.
In one of the stars, I shall be living. In one of them, I shall be laughing. It will be as if all the stars were laughing when you look at the night sky. Only you will have the stars that can laugh. I, too, shall look at the stars. They will all be wells with a rusty pulley. You will have 500 million little bills, and I shall have 500 million springs of fresh water. Now, let me go by myself.
You're afraid, little friend?
I am responsible for my flower. She is so weak, so naive. She has 4 thorns of no use at all.
Don't go. Please. Don't go. I seemed unable to move. The little prince hesitated, took 1 step. There was nothing there but a flash of yellow close to his ankle. He remained motionless for an instant. He did not cry out. He fell gently as a tree falls. There wasn't even any sound because of the sand. Now, years and years have gone by. Until now, I've never told this story. My sorrow is comforted a little. Not entirely, but I know he did go back to his planet. His body was not there at daybreak. At night, I love to listen to the stars. It's like 500 million little bells. But there is one extraordinary thing. When I drew the muzzle for the little prince, I forgot to add the leather strap to it. He will never have been able to fasten it on his sheep. So now I keep wondering what's happening on his planet. Perhaps the sheep has eaten the flower and the little bells are changed to tears. Here then is a great mystery. Nothing in the universe can be the same if somewhere a sheep that we have never seen has, yes or no, eaten a rose. And no grown-up will ever understand that this is a matter of so much importance. CBS Radio Workshop has presented The Little Prince by Antoine de Saint-Exupéry, produced and directed by Anthony Ellis. The script was adapted for radio by Frank Tausig. Richard Beals was heard as The Little Prince, with Raymond Burr as our narrator. Featured in the cast were Ben Wright, Joseph Kearns, and Hans Conried. Music for tonight's workshop was composed by Rene Garagank and conducted by Wilbur Hatch. This is to join us again next week when, from New York, we present H.L. Mencken, The Story of a Journalist. That's next week on the CBS Radio Workshop. Tune for 5 minutes of CBS News, to be followed on most of these same stations by My Son Jeep. America listens most to the CBS Radio Network.
Coming up next, Rat Patrol. House Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
Never draw yourself into a corner you can't paint your way out of.
Okay, fair
there
enough.
You go.
Yeah.
You definitely
no,
see
I
how
that.
I got Harold.
I did get that far in my Dr. Seuss books. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Wow. Yeah.
More aliens tomorrow. John Lithgow on CBS Radio Mystery Theater. How about that? With a tale called Alien
yep.
Presence. It must be Christmas in outer space.
Yep. And we have Dick Beals tonight. Tomorrow night we have John Beals with that as well.
Ooh.
Bales that aired on Beals. A Monday. Monday.
It's tomorrow at 6:30 Eastern, and then, about an hour and a half later, when our show comes to our show comes to a close, guess what's going to happen then? Maybe.
It'd be Horrible Horror starring Gar the Ghoul on Twitch.
Yep. Who's in that? Oh,
yeah, good old Bob.
Starring Gar the Ghoul.
Yeah. Good old Bob said that was uncomfortably nonsensical and confusing. Apparently, it was the guy... dehydrating to death in a desert, and he came up with that, I guess. I guess that's where that went, that whole story.
I don't know.
That's how I got my friends.
Uh-huh. Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
But it was great hearing Hans Conried again. I love him too,
yes,
Gar. He's so recognizable. His voice has a certain
timbre
to it.
Right. He has one of these voices, kind of like Vincent Price for me, that I find difficult to duplicate. And I like voices. I like imitating voices. Hans Conried? Nope, can't touch it.
Yeah, I would have difficult with that myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because
yep.
I, too,
and
like
some reason,
impressions and things.
Yeah. And Vincent Price, I can't touch his either. I don't know why.
I don't know many that can. I mean, I've seen a lot
Rich
of professional
Little,
comics,
heard Rich
and I can't recall anyone doing Price.
I've heard Rich Little do Vincent. I have.
Was it good?
It wasn't bad. It wasn't bad.
Oh, okay. I mean, I can say, can you dig it? But that's not Vincent Price.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, nobody can dig it like Vincent Price.
No, never.
Nope. Well, we're going to have a slightly different outro tonight that's just fits our programming to a T. So.
Okay.
Just thought I'd warn you a few
Uh-oh.
Seconds ahead of time, you know, as
okay.
the clock runs down. Join us tomorrow night at 6:30, won't you, for CBS Radio Mystery Theater and then Gar the Ghoul. There's your Saturday night. That's all you need to worry about. That or go see Alice.
What more can you ask for? What more can you ask for?
And thanks for all you live listeners.
Your choice is simple. Join us and live in peace, or pursue your present course and face obliteration.
Sounds threatening.
We shall be waiting for your answer.
What choice?
The decision rests with you. Gort Beringer.
Which means the Erie House is a mental planet. We'll see you tomorrow night, kids.
There you go.
Good night, Irene.
There we go.
There we go.
Irene was here? What?
There we got a little smattering of Bernard Herrmann there.
Yep. You got to be careful of those smatterings, though, you know.
Yeah.
You always have to clean
you don't
up after.
Get over smattered.
Yeah.
So, Gara, I don't know if you were in on any of these discussions, but one of the nights, I mean, maybe not. I think we were talking to CW after the show Saturday, but one of the nights, it's going to be all different kinds of music for Halloween. Not just some old...
Oh,
old
yeah.
Time. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm
sent you guys a boatload of stuff with that Hegel's happening. And,
well,
yeah, there's all kinds of stuff in there.
I've got 3 to 6 selections from there, actually, that I'm using. Because
okay.
One of the nights is Halloween Party.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They're all about Halloween parties. But we're going to have a music night with a melange of stuff, not just stuff like from Hegel's and so forth, but also music used in movies that I've culled from some public domain movies over there.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so we'll,
I'll be with you guys on Friday, the 28th.
I think the music one is Friday, if I'm not mistaken. So that'll be fun if you could join us with that one.
I can. Well, yeah.
We can wax nostalgic about the movies that I have music from that I feel is either just stock music enough or, you know, again, from the PD movie. Kind of walking the line,
right.
But we're going to do it.
There you go. And then Saturday, the 29th, I'll be doing Harbor Heart. On the 30th, I don't have anything going on, but I wouldn't say I'm kind of wiped out from the Saturday show on Sunday. And on the 31st, I'm not going to be available. I don't do anything on the actual day of.
Actually,
I turn
the last
off all my
years,
computers.
We haven't
been
doing a show on the 31st, have we, Dave?
No. Just we wrap it up with a War of the Worlds. And yet another version.
Yeah,
another version yet this year.
It was a good day for me to... Number one, I wanna cook something weird, and I try to come up with weird Halloween foods and treats and things. If I don't like them, but if you like snowballs, you can stick...
Watch what you say.
Pipe cleaners in them and make legs, and you can make a spider out of one, you know, or little stuff like that. Although
like a Hostess snowball?
Yeah.
Okay.
Spider, right. You can make a big fuzzy spider out of one.
Big
you know?
Fuzzy white. Yeah, okay. All right,
yeah.
I have to avoid such tasty comestibles, but
when you're total fail tried making a brain out of a cauliflower and like you put red dye on it. Oh, it was horrible. It did not taste good. But
see, in these, go ahead.
Do you like stuffed peppers, you know, like just stuffed peppers?
I'm not a peppers guy. I can't go too hot.
Green peppers.
I mean, yeah, if it's a green pepper with some hamburger and onion or
bell pepper.
I don't go for vegetables. Sorry.
Oh, but it's what's inside, Dave.
He only eats paper bags.
It's filled with meat and rice and garlic and onion, baby.
Yeah.
Anyway, I made them 1 year, and usually my wife just stuffs the peppers. Well, I carved Halloween faces and used, like, orange peppers, and they were really cute. They were Halloween stuffed peppers. They were really cute.
Ah, there you go.
Tasty, I might add.
Yeah. And it's funny, the red bell pepper and the green bell pepper, I could be wrong, but I think they are of the same hotness, spiciness, whatever.
They're not spicy at all.
I don't think the red are. Yeah, they're not. Yeah, it's odd. Because most
and the
of the
red
time,
ones,
if you run across red,
they're sweeter. They're
right.
Really good.
Yes, right. So you could actually take and like if you took and you carved out like a star out of the red one, and then carved a star out of the green one. You take the red star and shove it into the green one, and now you've got multicolored peppers there. Although if you bake them, they would contort. Yeah, I don't know if it would work.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe use. Toothpicks. I don't know what it would take to keep it in there.
Because
you could bake a toothpick, it won't burst into flame. You know, but what the heck? Something went boing. Oh, I just saw this because we were talking about space. NASA says that the Mars rover, one of the Mars rovers, was collecting specimens, and it ran across a specimen of rock that has the key building blocks of, like, carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen that we would find in, say, your fossil information here on Earth, meaning that there was a point in time where there was life on Mars?
Yeah.
Okay.
Possible plant life and rudimentary life things.
Didn't you listen to the second story where he said he was the last man from Mars? Come on.
Yeah, come on. Yeah.
Keep up, will you?
Well, now science is backing that up. Yeah, there we go. Okay, yeah. I guess.
Yeah.
So that was kind of like...
One day's science is another day's oopsie.
I know. Well, yep. That's the great thing about listening to all the old-time radio programs and their conjecture about science and science fiction that would later turn into science. It was,
Yeah, that's true. That's very true.
But, okay, so see, the thing with Mars, this is a whole huge discussion, but at one point in time, Mars had a dynamo likened to what we have on Earth. The internal workings of the planet are a dynamo. It's constantly crunching carbon, and it's got molten activity going on. That was at one point in time going on Mars, but Mars lost its poles or something. Something happened to it, and that dynamo went dormant, and the metal inside the core of Mars went cold, and it is what it is. But if Mars had a working dynamo like Earth does, it would allow for an atmosphere, and it would allow for life on it.
Very similar to
what we've got going on.
Would it have enough mass to hold a fair amount of atmosphere, though? I don't know.
If it had the dynamo, it would have more of a gravity, because that dynamo also creates your gravity. So you got the internal workings of the planet as well as its attraction to the sun and all that. So
there is no,
it would increase.
There is no gravity. There is no gravity. The Earth sucks.
I'll give that to you. All right, there you go.
Thank you.
All right, you got a boing on that one. All right, but so Mars and Earth could very well, be the only thing would be Mars would be considered a colder version of Earth, I guess, because it's further away. But
yeah.
But it could still change.
I saw a magazine once in a doctor's office because they have lots of old magazines there, and maybe it's not like even like a Popular Mechanics how you could warm up the planet Mars by, kind of shielding it from some of the sun to help create some atmosphere. By doing that, you could help to warm up the planet.
They
said it would take like 10 years to bring up the temperature. Lord knows we're good about bringing up the temperature here. We should be able to bring it up on Mars.
Yeah, so that's one thing they're talking about. Yeah, we just need to take cows and put them on Mars and let them, gas up the place.
No goats? The goat didn't like it.
When it gets over vegetated, we'll send the goats, because as we know, goats.
The dynamo is more about
this,
that.
Or maybe before. Not, Gar, but that one show Dave did, the Goats on the Loose, for ghosts on the loose. There are companies that rent out their goats, or farmers anyway, that rent out their goats for people that want to clear like areas of their land.
Yeah. Mike Mace rented them to clear out poison ivy because it pulls it up by the root, literally kills it because it pulls it up by the root.
Yeah, let them have an itchy face.
No.
What does that do to the goat?
They're not allergic.
Okay, they're not allergic.
Doesn't hurt the goat.
They're not allergic to it.
Oh, well, then I'm all for it.
Well, the conjecture is...
It's the stuff on
conjecture
there.
Conjecture
said
a goat is cheaper than a lawnmower?
It takes it out at the root. It literally rips up from the root. So
right.
It won't be back.
Do they like mints? Because
right.
I have mints that I don't use. I need to get rid of it. And it's like a weed that keeps coming back.
Mint?
Yeah, no. Mint. Nobody needs mint.
Like
mint. Nobody needs mint.
Like a mint julep? What do you
spearmint? Spearmint.
Oh, spearmint. Oh, you don't like spearmint? I think you could, can't you pull it up and turn it into a tea or something? I don't know.
I would imagine you
yeah,
could.
My grandfather,
rather make gum.
My grandfather used
it.
To grow that. Yeah, my grandfather used to grow that amongst
yeah,
many
it,
other things.
It smells really nice, though. It really does. And I harvested my potatoes. I got like 25 to 30 pounds of potatoes.
Wow, how many acres you got on there?
Didn't take a lot of space.
Wait.
My garden is probably...
Did you say pounds or each? 25...
Pounds.
About 25, yeah, 20 to 25 pounds of potatoes.
That's a small child.
Yeah. Which we are going to eat.
Okay.
20 to 25 pounds of potatoes, but yet he never picked cotton.
No.
Him and Roy Clark.
But
him
I
and Roy
potatoes.
Clark, yeah.
Wait, this cotton doesn't grow up there, does it? Does it?
No.
Probably not up here.
No,
maybe this week, but, you know.
Maybe this week. Until it snows next Thursday, yeah.
I like growing stuff you can eat. You know what I mean? You
yeah,
got
potatoes
no chemicals.
Are on
we
my
don't even put, we don't even put Miracle-Grow on stuff. We got a lot of cherry tomatoes. We got like a million of these cherry tomatoes. And they're big for
yeah.
cherry tomatoes. They're like almost golf balls. Jesus.
Like cherry, wow. That's not your cherry bomb tomato, man.
Yeah.
Cherry
yeah.
bomb tomato, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, we, let's see.
No cucumbers, though.
No
My
cucumbers.
Plants were
no
horrible. They dried up and turned to crispy, yes.
Oh, so you tried to grow cucumbers,
yeah.
But,
yeah, the
but they didn't work
died.
Out?
No, they didn't work out.
Oh.
Lots of
well,
parsley.
We've got possibly the first.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, I was saying, we had possibly our first hurricane headed our way, up to 70 or 80 mile an hour winds projected by later, soon.
Oh, jeez. You better batten down the hatches there, buddy.
I've never batten
yeah.
down the hatches. I created the Bozotron, and I post silly weather parodies about the weather.
I don't want you flying off into the Gulf, you know?
I've lost power here for like a week or two, a couple
really?
Years back, if you remember.
That sucks.
Okay.
Yep.
I was posting
yep.
Bozotrons all the way up to losing power, making fun of the storm and all until, you know, it took the power out. And then after I came back on, more Bozotron 9000s. Bozotron 9000. It's a clown telling you the weather. There you go.
And that's different from the news. How?
I don't know. Well, that was something I said. And which one was it? Which one was it?
Yeah, which
the,
one?
Now I can't. The visitor. The visitor. One thing I didn't put it together while I was listening it or until tonight, and I said, "Well, look, it's the birth of fake news." From the Family Theater of the Visitor, where. They re-scripted the alien. They blew up his plane. He died or whatever, you know. Fake news. Fake news! So, yeah, I did.
It's everywhere.
Well, see, I had more fun with the Bozotron because I had an in route with a local weather presenter. And so she and I would make jokes about the weather a little bit. She couldn't go too deep into it, but she enjoyed it. And unfortunately, she's moved off to the Ozarks or something. She's somewhere
the Ozarks.
Yeah, she is. She moved to her and her newly crowned husband
to the
Ozarks.
To the Ozarks? To the Ozarks and was never seen again.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It was like, and we never saw her again. Ooh. Yeah, there you go.
Last thing they heard was, boy, you got a pretty mouth.
Yeah, we're not going there. Nope, nope, nope. Nope, nope, nope. I had a lot of fun with the Buzzotron thing. I really should bring it back because we're coming up on our first weather event. I've used it a little bit, but I need to really come up with something. Like every time that they say there's an announced cone where it's projected to go, I replace it with an ice cream cone on the map. Ice cream cone.
Instead of a cone of info.
They, again, like potatoes, they're on my no-fly list. depends on where you want to go with all that. You have to enjoy your life, but at the same time, you have to do things to keep your health going. So it's kind of a, struggling act.
Yeah.
You know. So it's do you say no to this food or do you, whatever,
It gets harder. I'm glad I got this dog, though. He's motivated me to be far more active.
Oh, yeah. That would be really helpful for me, too. Yeah. I've been replacing my dog walking with working out in the yard. Working out in the yard! And
we kind of try to do that together. When I have to go out, I take a ball with me to make him chase it around while I'm keeping busy.
Yeah, I made the mistake of trying to run with my dog, and my dog tripped me, and I fell, and I didn't crack him, but I bruised my rib, and that hurt for 3 months. That's like my rib. I can't, ouch. That was a long time ago.
Sometimes all I have to do to keep him busy. Sometimes all I have to do to keep him busy is tell him, you can't have that ball, and he'll take it and go and run like mad. I let him run himself out.
Yeah.
Well, I
enjoy the notion of pet. He does or does not?
Does not. He'll run up to you, but he's saying, now you chase me.
Ah.
You know what I mean? He won't give the ball back. I want you to chase me with it.
Right. Well, that's when you have another ball. And you go, well, there you go. And he drops
that
the one
works
he stuck.
So easy. Yeah, you distract him with the other one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Like, want this one? And he drops that one. Like, well, there you go. Yeah.
If you really want to have fun, get an armful and throw it and watch him go, oh!
Oh, I know. Yeah. Spaz out. Yeah. Which one? My dog has been passed for over 2 years, I think. My backyard still has tennis balls back there. And I'm not throwing them away on purpose. I just, what the hell? Leave them there. Why not? They're not hurting anybody. And all of my beware of dog signs. Okay, so it's got the dog sign out there. It also has the tennis balls back there. Maybe they'll go, there's a dog somewhere, Maybe.
Beware of the ferret.
Yeah, exactly. All them ferrets. I just have to bite my tongue and just control my impulses to go get another pet, because if I do, it's like an anchor for staying here, and I really have to go.
Yeah.
Still looking towards moving up north, not as far north as Ohio. I know you guys would like that. I don't know. Would that be good? I don't know. But
oh, my God. That'd be awesome. You'd like the winter? They're not too bad here.
Yeah,
we have mild winters, too.
Yeah.
But it's kind of nice to watch the seasons change. We're getting ready for all the leaves to change pretty much right now.
Well,
Dave,
there's the opportunity.
Yep. Get ready.
If I do move north, but I don't move to Ohio, I could move north and be closer to a road trip to you guys. That could be possible.
True.
Whereas a road trip from Florida to Ohio, a little bit,
that's a bit of a cruise.
A little bit more of a burden there, but just a couple hours, okay, maybe. So we will see where I end up.
We will see what the future holds.
Southern Ohio ain't bad.
Southern Ohio's bad.
Yeah, north, south.
If you speak Appalachian, it ain't bad anyway.
It ain't bad if you got more than
it ain't
two
bad in Apple. It ain't bad in Appalachian. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what southeast Ohio is.
Yeah.
Borderline Appalachia country.
Is that an area where you might use a family reunion as a dating opportunity? Is that what we're saying?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Precisely.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, I'll pass. Thanks, guys, but no thanks.
What do you call a virtuous girl in Appalachia? A girl who can outrun her brothers. All right. Oh my goodness. I tried to, at least I cleaned it up.
You did.
A little bit.
So, one of the things we were talking about, the subject for today's program being spacemen and stuff. See, there are folks out there that some of them, they think, aliens, they are abundant. They're watching us. They're grabbing our cows and our cowboys and checking them out. I don't know.
And they're probing us in horrible ways.
Yeah. But my kind of caveat on all that is if you've got a race of beings, and they probably might look more like protein gelatin than a human being, but you never know. Okay, if they have the technology to transverse the cosmos, and we can barely make it to the third planet, or not the third, the fifth planet, whatever, but we can barely make it to Mars right now. We are way under the techno scope. We should not look forward to anybody coming here. We do not have the technology. Now, I liked that Star Trek addressed that. They're only coming for, if they are headed here from the reaches of space, they're looking for resources. It's not, we want to help you. No, I don't think so. Mm-mm, no, forget about it. We would be like a gnat to,
judgy. You're so judgy.
To a human. Yeah. I am. I'm a judgy ghoul.
I don't want you running the military, man. You're going to get us blowed up.
Yep, he blowed up real good.
Real good.
So it would absolutely be the other way around. We would not get the upper hand and likened to the, War of the Worlds, that they would come here and be defeated by a lowly organism, like, the common cold or whatever it was.
If they were anticipating it, what if their world had no such biological threats? It seems unlikely, but we do limit our thinking, and this is what I've always wondered. We limit our thinking to life structures as we know it. Isn't it not possible that life could have, and just for a crazy reference, a life came to a rock or something, sentient life?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is that or some other substance,
Or like a protein glob of Jell-O type thing,
Back to the oobleck. Back to the oobleck.
But if you have a being or group of beings that had the technology to move through space,
mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure they're going to check for, cootie bugs.
Well, that's why they're probing.
Right.
In the worst of places.
There's only so many places. See, they could have simplified this years ago and said, no, we're just going to take, a cheek swab, But no, somebody took it in the other direction.
Yeah, the cheeks, yes.
There you go. That one, yeah, exactly.
Yes, just turn the other cheek.
Mm-hmm.
As the saying goes.
So... So my point would be we don't and should not welcome aliens because it's like a human being's understanding of an ant. Some group of beings that can transverse the universe and come here. Yeah, not good. It's not looking good for us. We would be something to be gotten rid of, out of the way.
You don't think it could be just a group of explorers, scientists, peaceful scientists that want to study other worlds?
Even Gene Roddenberry, the Star Trek guy, came up with, did I do that right? It's Gene Roddenberry, isn't it? Even he came up with something where on the Enterprise came back on their first little trek. They ended up coming back to the Earth. And they said, so what do we need to do to update the Enterprise? More firepower. There are hostile things out there. Yeah, we need more firepower. We need more phasers.
Well, I mean,
more
for a better adventure story, for sure.
Well, true, and that's what it is. Yeah. It's like the Wild Wild West, but in space.
You also have instances of science fiction where...
Compassion?
The aliens are benign.
Right, right.
Let us
help you. Yeah.
No, not so much let us help you. Maybe just morbid curiosity. What are these primitive butt-scratch creatures?
Again, you look at what we've done to lesser creatures here, it's not looking too good. You know? I don't know. I mean, it's only now, 2020-something, whatever, and we're just now going, maybe it's not... And they use this word, humane. Okay, that's human with an E on it. All right, maybe it's not humane to test on animals. Well, then what was the problem before? So, I don't know.
Oh, you're making me think. That's not fair.
It makes my head hurt.
Just think of a Dr. Seuss book. Just think of a Dr. Seuss book.
No, I didn't get through all the Dr. Seuss books.
I think I have the compendium.
Hop on pop. One fish, two fish.
I'm not gonna
red fish, blue fish.
Yeah.
I
think I have the compendium.
I do not like them. Some I am. Yeah.
I'm in my safe place. I'm in my Seuss safe place.
Yeah. That I have a book that I love. That's very. It's like in the Dr. Seuss, but not. It's called Never Tease a Weasel. And it's a great book about not teasing lesser animals. It's about telling kids, you know, don't tease or injure a cat or a weasel or
morality.
A bunny or anything.
It's a morality tale.
It is. It's a kind story, yeah.
No.
But they released the Dr. Seuss books in a package with its own little plastic bookshelf. I think it held like four books or something like that. And then you buy the next set and it would come with a little plastic bookshelf. I remember having most of them. It's kind of crazy thinking about the Dick and Jane books. You guys had those, right?
Yep.
A reading. Wow. Yeah. And I had them. But if you mention that today, nobody knows what it is.
No.
That's because we had fun with Dick and Jane, and they're a different pronoun now, so.
Yeah. Oh, no, they were cool because they had a dog, they had their sister Sally, and they had adventures. It was great.
Yep. And their dog, Opie.
They did.
Dog was Spot, I thought.
Spot.
Yep.
And Spot left, Spot left spots all over the yard.
Yeah, those little burn spots they leave.
Yep. Well, that's one plus about kind of. I mean, I'd rather have a doggy, but by not having a doggy, I don't have to go out and clean up the backyard all the time.
Oh, that's an ongoing. Especially when you have 87 pounds of dog.
Yeah, well, thankfully he's not leaving 87 pounds in the yard, you know. So
if you let it build up, I'm sure it would make.
Oh, if you let, yeah, no, I was out there
very short time.
Right? No, I was out there with a with my square point shovel. If the dog went out, I grabbed the shovel and I went out with him. Clean as you go. Clean as you go.
Yep, and when we go for a walk, we have the little scoopy bags, you know, the little handy bags.
Yep.
So you don't leave it in somebody's yard.
Yeah, I had those. Right, yep.
It is uncouth to leave that in someone's yard.
It is. And I see people walking their
animals. Unless you're deliberately
and
throwing it there yourself. It's a dumb animal to do it. Yeah. No, that's not right. But if you're flinging it at them for some reason, then that's
like a monkey. You know, I was up in Old Brooklyn. We were walking down the road there, and there was a sign that said, "Thank you for picking up." And they had a little thing there where they had little doggy bags, bag dispenser right there. Somebody left some dog poop right next to the doggy bag dispenser.
When were you in Old Brooklyn? I started my family there. I live right by.
We did some filming there. We did some filming there. I'll be back there again tomorrow to drop off the video.
Do they still have that bar that looks like the one from Drew Carey?
Well, that's the one it was based on. Yeah. Yes,
I lived a block and a half from there.
Yep. Yep, and Drew Carey grew up and graduated from Old Brooklyn.
Yeah. When that show was really hitting it, I would drive down my street 2.5 blocks. It was a dead bar, though. I'd go in there just to check it out. And
They only used the outside. They did not use the inside, yeah.
Yep. But it was still, it's like, oh, wow, this is on TV every week. Whoa. Put Old Brooklyn on the map. Nah, he had a lot of Cleveland references on that show.
He did.
Yeah, it kind of lowers my expectations of humanity when you've got, please curb your dog and here's a bag, and then someone doesn't do it right there at the sign. Oh, man.
They did right at the sign, yeah.
I hate it.
Very talented dog.
You know society's
very
gone to heck.
Very talented dogs do that.
You know your society's gone to heck when you have a sign in the bathroom that says, "Employees, wash your hands before returning to work." In the bathroom, you have to tell them. You have to put warning labels on something that's called poison. It says poison on the label, but you have to put a warning label on it. It already says poison. What?
And if they say it's for the kids, the kids can't read. What are you doing?
There you go.
Poison. Didn't you see? It said right on the bottle.
I can't read.
There you go.
I can't read.
I don't know. It doesn't take much to keep that stuff out of a child or an animal's reach.
And we have all kinds of things. You can put stuff on your cabinets that make it difficult to open. You know, all kind. You know, you can put it on a higher shelf. You know.
Yeah.
But some of that requires logic. I don't know.
And if the kid's smart enough to stack furniture and get up there, he's smart enough to not freaking drink poison.
You would think, but one doesn't follow the other per se.
I know. That was only for comedy.
You would think. Yeah. And you know that's curiosity killed thee. You know, it was like kid on a ladder, you know. And even though I fully know how to use a ladder, I don't like using a ladder. I know the nuts and bolts of using a ladder. I don't like climbing up on my roof, but that's me.
Yeah. I don't mind falling off a roof. It's that sudden stop at the end.
that bouncing.
That's what hurts.
All that bouncing afterwards.
It's bad. Falling's kind of fun, but not, you know.
Yeah.
Until you're not falling anymore.
No cares, wind blowing in the breeze. It's nice.
Yeah.
And then there's that thump and bump and roll thing. Yeah,
that's that's where the fun completely comes to a grinding halt.
Yeah, dude.
What's the highest height you ever fell from?
Either. Maybe four, four, 4 feet, and I broke both sides of one ankle on 1 foot.
Ooh, ow. That couldn't have been fun.
I was in a wheelchair for about 6 months.
Have you ever heard of tuck and roll? Come on.
The landing.
Steve, didn't you not too long ago have a ladder experience? A chair or a ladder experience?
Well, that wasn't really that. I mean, yeah, that was probably, wearing socks on a ladder inside the house. On a slate floor.
Oh,
yeah.
Nice.
OSHA would have shut you down, Dave.
and that was like, yeah, I was only like 4 feet. I've fallen farther. I threw myself into a dumpster. It was at least 4 feet before for one of my sketches.
You took a digger in your bedroom, didn't you, Dave, not that long ago?
Did you clip the corner of your bed or something?
Yeah.
Well, no, the corner of the wall. There's a big part that isn't a corner anymore. Yeah, it's kind of rounded off.
I was an idiot. I jumped off of a ranch house into a 3.5 foot pool.
Oh,
a 3.5 foot pool. Okay.
Yeah, well, 3.5 foot pool. 3.5 foot deep, not 3.5 feet around. That'd have been a mess.
Yeah.
That was a crazy kid. Should have been a little deeper than that, yeah.
No, I was in a tree in my mid-30s, age-wise.
Well.
And I was like four feet off the ground. And I was like, oh, okay. And so I jumped out of the tree. But the ground wasn't even, so when I hit, the ankle pivoted to the right, snap, and then I tried to regain, and it went to the other side, snap, and I was like, well, there you go. There was some type of root activity on the ground, and I didn't see it, and I felt it.
Yeah. No, I'm lucky for all the stupid mishaps I've had with automobile and motorcycle accidents and chainsaws and what have you. I've never broken a bone, a weight-bearing bone, you know, like nothing below the ribs. I've never broken a bone below the ribs that I know of.
Broken collarbone, a few broken fingers.
Same here. Yep.
Yeah, I think that's about it. No arms or legs or anything.
Worst thing was breaking my thumb, and it was right at the base, and it's now my barometer. Oh. I can tell when the weather's going to change significantly.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's right at the joint, and it's like, you son of a bitch, that hurts. Oh. But it usually doesn't last long, but it's just when it's there, it's like it's really there.
Yep.
Yep. Rain's coming, Martha. Close the windows. Close the windows.
And see, that would be where I would welcome the aliens, because I would go, hey, do you guys got any medical technology to, you know, kind of help me out here and get rid of this thing that's going to ache until you die, you know, because
Yeah. Well, I think Joey's telling me it's time to go up and see my buddy Pal. Joe's attacking me over here.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he's probably crossing his legs.
Say, get out of his room, huh? Say, get out of his room. Get out of my room!
Yep.
Yeah, Kitty doesn't want Joey, or Joey doesn't want Pal around. He's scared of him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, fun outing this week.
If Pal's outside for a long time, he will come up for a little bit. He'll come upstairs.
The cat's finally braving the dog?
No. He knows when the dog's outside. He's got really good ears.
Okay.
He'll camp out on the top step, too, and he'll listen. He'll peep under the door. And then sometimes Pal will recognize him. He'll start barking. And, of course, then you hear the scrambling, which is Joe running back downstairs.
Wow.
Raph, I thought he didn't see me.
Wow, that is so crazy.
He's such a coward. Well, the dog just, Here, the other day he bolted after a groundhog, and he cornered it, and the groundhog kind of stood up, and the dog froze like, now what? See, he doesn't want to hurt anything. He wants to know what it is. He wants everybody to play with him. He thinks everybody,
right.
The neighbor has this little baby bulldog, and that's his best buddy. He can't wait, and he goes nuts when he first sees him, and then he finally chills, and they start acting normal. But when he first meets anybody, he's just like, oh, my God, this is the greatest thing ever. Stupid dog. He's the best. But he's big, and it's obnoxious. I have to restrain him on the leash so he doesn't, like, knock people over at first.
Yeah. Yeah, my first doggy Benny was very over the top when he first meets you, and then he'll calm down.
Yeah, yeah. But that's cool. It's a friendly dog. At least you know it's like, oh, boy, this is the greatest thing that ever happened lately.
Right.
Yeah.
But if someone knocks at the door, there's a strange sound. Whoa, woof. You know, he's going to let you know what's going on. So it's kind of a good give and take there.
Yep.
All right, so go water your dog or dog your water or whatever you need to do.
Let's turn on the house lights, put on the three spotlights, and bring out Mr. James Durante to close out the show.
Good night. We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo.
Toodaloo. Good night. Good night. Good night. Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash.
Yes, it was all about dreams.
You were.